this is a special session of the Division 5 of the Colorado Court of Appeals. We have one case we're going to hear, Weston against One West Bank. It's my understanding that Mr. Weston has died.
Correct.
And can you fill me in a little more, the lesson a little more on that?
Yes, Your Honor. I talked with Vernon Evans, who is in the courtroom today. He is the lawyer who is opening the state. There's a personal representative who has agreed to be appointed, but they're going through the initial steps of that, and that's all I know at this point.
Who has authority to speak to direct the attorneys and to speak on behalf of this claim?
It's my understanding in talking with Mr. Evans, Your Honor, is that the personal representative, the person who's agreed to do it, and he would like this appeal to go forward in its present form. That's my understanding. I've also just been informed, Your Honor, though, that by Mr. Evans, the yesterday opposing counsel contacted him shortly after I filed that and attempted to settle this case without contacting me first. That's all I will say about that at this time.
Thank you. Appellee's counsel, do you have any objection to proceeding with argument today?
The only objection I would have, Your Honor, is that until the personal representative is appointed and duly empowered to make decisions on behalf of the estate, I don't think the appeal should go forward. But to the extent this court says that we should proceed, then I will proceed as requested.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Your Honor, if I may, I did not hear what she said. I have a heart.
She said that she doesn't believe we should proceed with the appeal until the personal representative has been appointed.
You just stood up. Did you want to say something?
Yes, please, the court. I can shed some light on where the district court is as far as the probate actions.
That would be helpful for me.
As Mr. Burnett said, my name is Vern Evans, and I represented the deceased, and I'm also representing the state. The probate action has been opened in Eagle County. The letters of administration have not been issued because the court up there is waiting for us to receive the affidavit of renunciation from three of the deceased's long lost cousins. Those affidavits are in the mail, and we've contacted the cousins, and I would anticipate that we would have the signed affidavits back hopefully by the end of the week, but certainly before Christmas.
Mr. Evans, there is a will.
No, sir, there's no will.
There's no will.
And that's why letters of administration are being issued instead of letters systematic.
And has someone applied to administer the estate?
Yes, Your Honor. The estate has been opened. The probate case has been opened, and which signifies to me that the court in Eagle County has accepted the application and considers it valid. But the statutes require that where there's no will, there needs to be renunciation of the right to administer the estate from everybody who has that right. And the deceased had a total of six cousins We've been able to get in contact and have the renunciation back from three of them, but not the other three yet.
And who is it that has filed the estate for probate? Is you?
I filed it on behalf of the one cousin. His name is Robert Ball.
And are you seeking to have the court appoint you as the administrator?
No, Robert Ball will.
Robert Hall.
Robert, I filed paperwork on behalf of him.
Okay, good. And is Mr. Hall aware of this of these proceedings today?
He is. We've been discussing, and he and I have been discussing the case, and he's aware that we're here today.
Does he express a preference as to whether this argument should proceed?
He would like to see it proceed, Your Honor.
And has he expressed any preference about who would represent the estate here in this argument?
We intend that as soon as he has letters of administration in his hands, that he will engage the same firm that's been handling it up to this point.
What I'm going to direct is as follows. We will hear oral argument today. When the administrator is appointed, I would like counsel to provide us with an affidavit from the administrator stating and the probate court's appointment of the administrator stating that the administrator is aware that we heard oral argument, wants to continue to be represented, and wants the appeal to go forward, be represented by counsel here present, and wants the appeal to move forward.
We'll be happy to cooperate in any way.
We will not issue an opinion until we receive those documents. Any other comments from counsel, either counsel? All right, counsel, did you receive our written instructions as far as oral argument? And do you have any questions before we begin? Okay, we will first hear argument from the appellant's counsel.
May it please the court. My name is Stephen Brunette, Colorado number 26387. Also with me are Matthew Drexler, number 38644, and Alan Gasper, number 31255. Your Honor, the issues are fully briefed in the briefs. There are basically three items I'd like to focus on today. One is that we have a plainly erroneous ruling from a district court that elevated a Rule 120 order and the consequences of that, including the confirmation deed from the public trustee, elevated those to the status of a final judgment under Rule 105. This was filed as an action for a complete adjudication under Rule 105 of all claims of rights and interests in this property. That includes all claims of rights and interests in this property under law that is, since 1867, it's 130-year-old law. That's what we wanted, complete adjudication. The district court, in real simple, concise words, basically said we have a confirmation deed that resolves the 105 issues. That, Your Honor, is a clearly erroneous ruling, and we requested that be vacated. The second major point is that this court has authority under Atchison, Topeka, and Santa Fe Railroad, cited on page 15 of the brief, to review the documents of record filed in this 105 proceeding fresh and make a determination of whether One West has title to this property, and they have a valid claim or interest in this property today without remanding. This court has the authority to review those documents. And we ask this court to do that and determine, based on the correct findings below and your own review of these documents, that the purported corporation assignment on which One West relied below was not a valid assignment. The trial court correctly found and ruled that that was not a valid assignment. The note was not endorsed in any manner whatsoever. There was a stamp on it for a place for an endorsement. It was not endorsed in blank or otherwise. One West has no valid claim or right or interest in this property, and they're the only defendant now.
Well, counsel, for an action under Rule 105, It's not enough to simply point out defects in your opponent's claim to title. You have to establish that you have a claim of title. If you fail to do that, the 105 has to be dismissed. Given that it doesn't appear to be disputed that your client was in default, what claim to title does he have?
Dr. Weston had a warranty deed. He was a record owner of this property, and he had a mortgage. There was a lien that was filed by the original entity there. His claim of right, and this is briefed in the reply brief as well, title is, for purpose of the action, is determined as of the date that the action is filed.
But as of the date the action was filed, he was in default.
No, Your Honor, default, at the time it was filed, there's only under Rule 120D, there's a reasonable probability of default. That's all that is made. It's not an adjudication. And default cannot even be raised as an issue until real party in interest is determined. Here we have a party who has failed to establish there even the real party in interest in this claim. If the real party in interest is not filing it, default is not even an issue. There are district courts that rule on that correctly, you know, these days. You know, they
but,
do.
But that, I mean, but the bank has alleged that your client was in default, and throughout these proceedings, you've never contested that. I don't see one word in anything in the lower court or this court contesting that your client failed to pay in accordance with the note.
I didn't pay on the note, Your Honor, but default does not become an issue until the person, if it's raised by a person who has yet to establish that they are the real party in interest. Real party in interest in the Goodwin versus District Court, there was an interlineation on the deed. Of course, so that raises a question as to whether this entity is a real party in interest. This is not just a gamesmanship, Your Honor. Dr. Weston doesn't claim he wants something for nothing. He wants to know who holds his note. So he was trying to get his affairs in order, make sure his estate was in good shape.
But whether or not the bank is the correct party to foreclose doesn't really affect the quiet title claim if your client was in default and failed to pay on the note. Because again, you can't simply point to a defect in the other party's title. You have to establish that you have a claim to title. And we have case law that says Rule 105 is not intended to quiet title in defaulting parties.
I'm sorry, what was that? What says that?
Yes, we have case law that says explicitly that Rule 105 mm-hmm. is not intended to quiet title in defaulting parties.
The status of title is determined on the date it is filed, okay? The lien holder have a lien. Colorado is a lien theory state. The homeowner has title to the property, and a Rule 105 was specifically created, set up for a complete adjudication of rights. Default is not even an issue until it is brought up in the context of a complete adjudication. Here we had no adjudication whatsoever, no discovery, and any claims of right that the defendants have would have to be established in the context of discovery. And the evidence that's already before the court, in the public records even, show that this note, who knows where it is? Dr. Weston wants to know who he has to pay. And well, default has not even come up, Your Honor.
Do you dispute as an officer of the court that your client is in default? And was it as of the date of the filing of the Rule 120?
Your Honor, this is not a Rule 120 court, nor is this an appeal from a Rule 120 judgment. It's a court of appeals of the state of Colorado.
I know what we are, counsel, and I'm asking you a question, and I expect an answer to it. As an officer of the court, do you represent that your client was not in default on the date of the Rule 120 proceeding?
I represent that my client was not making some payments on the date of the Rule 120 proceeding, and that the court found that a reasonable probability of default, which is all a Rule 120 court can find, because it's not a judicial proceeding, it's entered without prejudice to be litigated completely, as this case is intended to do. That's where it is.
All right, so your client wants to know, or wanted to know, who holds the note. Okay, he wasn't making payments, but he wants to know who has the note. Right. And I would ask, to what purpose if he's not making payments?
Because he wanted to make sure that he wanted to resume payments, he wanted to get his affairs in order. He wanted to make sure he's dealing with the real party in interest, the party to which he owed the money, so that he could have clear title to his property.
Well, counsel,
his estate in order.
Sorry to interrupt. One West, were they a servicer?
One West was the servicer under the terms of trust, which they still have not yet identified, other than they transferred the deed to it. The servicer under the terms of a pooling servicing agreement, which we've alleged in the complaint based on the evidence that's come out, servicer of a particular trust. They service the note under the terms of the pooling servicing agreement on behalf of the trustee. As fully briefed, the real party in interest is a trustee, not the servicer. If the servicer wants to pursue a claim, they have to identify what gives them the right to do it. They have to say, we are servicing this note on behalf of this particular trust, and that's why we're here. If that was laid out, Dr. Wesson might have known who had his note. He could make an arrangement to make the payments, to make a new deal, make sure his affairs were in order. The law is laid out in the briefs that the servicer is not the real party in interest. The trustee is a real party in interest. And even then, you have to show that the note made it into the pooling servicing agreement to the trustee under the terms of the PSA, in order to be a part of the trust. If it's not, there's nothing in any pooling servicing agreement that says the servicer has the right to service notes that didn't make it into the trust, as well as the ones that did.
So let me be clear. Are you saying that the trustee, which I think here is Deutsche Bank, was or was not the trustee of a trust that included your client's loan?
There's no discovery. The allegation, Your Honor, and it's laid out in the amended complaint, is that it's only information and belief, because this was not disclosed to us because we didn't have adjudication. From how it looks, from the public records, this note would have been transferred by IndyBack to Deutsche Bank as trustee for such and such trust. There's an evidentiary question as to whether that note made it into the trust by the closing date, by the cutoff date, with all the endorsements that are required by the terms of the pooling servicing agreement. The terms of the pooling servicing agreement, which are laid out in the proposed amended complaint, require a series of intervening endorsements. None of that was done. What we've seen so far, Your Honor, and again, there's been no discovery, no litigation whatsoever, just certification that this is the case. What we've seen thus far is that this note had no endorsements, so it may not have even made it into the trust. The way to resolve these issues is in a 105 proceeding, a complete adjudication, not in a 120 proceeding based on a mere certification, which has been refuted by the evidence we have already.
The court heard the evidence, or looked at the evidence that was tendered to it, and also that had been tendered in the Rule 120 proceeding. That's not the same thing as saying that the court treated the result of the 120 proceeding as conclusive. The court simply looked at the documents and made legal rulings based upon the documents.
The 120 court, you mean?
The Rule 105 court.
The 105.
There was a motion for judgment on the pleadings and a motion to dismiss, and the court considered these documents.
Yes, Your Honor. The 105 court found that the assignment was not a valid assignment.
Correct.
That's a correct ruling. Found there's no endorsement of this note.
That's the corporate assignment you're referring to.
I'm sorry?
The corporation assignment, I think it was called.
Corporation assignment was not a valid assignment. There's no endorsement of the note. There's no evidence whatsoever that this note or this loan were transferred or otherwise conveyed to One West. All we have, just as the judge had on the first day, we have representations from the foreclosure lawyer, but no evidence whatsoever. That's what's still there. And the district court correctly found and ruled there's no valid assignment, there's no valid endorsement. You're not the qualified holder, as you said you were. You're not the holder under this provision, as you said, 3838801. You're not the holder under this provision. And then the court judicially constructed an agency relationship between One West and the FDIC that doesn't exist. It's refuted on the face of public documents. FDIC was a receiver for IndyMac. They transferred One West. One West purchased servicing rights to this loan, which they have to, assuming it's in the trust, we don't know because there's been no discovery. The servicing rights to this loan, if they have it, are all they have. They have a right to service it on behalf of the trust, which is Deutsche Bank.
But the PSA that you tendered to the court after summary judgment or after the judgment was entered says that the servicer can foreclose.
if the servicer has enough. What it says is the servicer can...
Can foreclose on behalf of the trustee?
It's that they have to bring in the trust as the real party in interest. That's in the language. If you read the, it's in the documentation there.
That's not exactly what it says. It says that if necessary, it is to obtain signatures from the trustee. If necessary.
If necessary.
That's what it says.
Well, then we have the evidentiary question of whether the note made it into the trust. The evidence we have so far is that it didn't. And again, all this is something that needs to be adjudicated, Your Honor, in a 105, not summarily disposed of in a 120. If this ruling is allowed to stand, it would elevate a 120 order to the status of a 105 judgment. It would basically effectively repeal Rule 105 at a time when Coloradans need to rely on their courts to give them their day in court, as Dr. Weston wanted to do. Repeal 105, repeal Rule 17, the rules of procedure, repeal Rule 19, requires a necessary party to be there, and it would allow a lawyer for someone who claims to be a qualified holder to certify they have a right to do so. I have a right to foreclose because I say so, and that would be the end of it. We'd eliminate more than a century of precedent under Rule 105, and we would basically repeal Rule 17, 19, and 105. You know, that's the significance of the case. It's not to make it more difficult for the courts. It's to make sure that we do it right. Certification provisions are a veil over more than a century of established law. Everything we file here is based on established law. The certification provisions that have been enacted in the last 10, 15 years are what's new. And those are what have caused this to happen, a series of correct rulings, ultimately erroneous ruling, that really needs to be reversed, Your Honor.
Mike, you can reserve the remainder of your time.
May it please the court. My name is Susan Hendrick, and my attorney registration number is 33196. With me at council table is Lisa Kalt, and her attorney registration number is 43054. Mr. Brunette gets up here and he says, I don't know who the holder of the evidence of debt is. I don't know who owns the note and deed of trust. I don't know who has possession of the note and deed of trust. I don't know is not sufficient to bring an action under Rule 105. I don't know is not sufficient to state a claim upon which relief may be granted. And in this particular action, pursuant to Rule 11 of the Colorado Rules of Civil Procedure, Mr. Brunette is only entitled to bring a complaint after reasonable inquiry, and his signature on that document specifically provides that that pleading is well-grounded in fact and law. In those pleadings, he says One West is not the holder of the evidence of debt. He doesn't know who has possession of the original note and deed of trust. Well, as I've told Mr. Brunette over and over again, One West is in possession of the original note and deed of trust, and One West has sent a copy of the note, sent the original note and deed of trust to our law office during the foreclosure and as bailee in this action, and is present in this courtroom, the original note and deed of trust, which has been represented over and over again.
Was that presented to the trial court?
It was in the trial court. We advised that we have possession of the original note and deed of trust, and that information was provided to Mr. Brunette that he could come anytime and view the original note in our office during the normal business hours by appointment.
So was it presented to the trial court?
The trial court never had a physical hearing where we were present. Otherwise, it would have been presented to the trial court.
So the representations that you've made here were made to the trial court?
I believe so, Your Honor. I know that during the foreclosure process, those representations were absolutely made and formed the basis of the Rule 120 decision for the order authorizing sale. So, and again, it was available to Mr. Brunette during the entire time. It has been our representation the entire time that One West is the holder of the evidence of debt, and that no other entity has come forward to claim that they are the holder of the evidence of debt.
Counsel, as I understand your argument on appeal, it's based entirely on this idea that because you possess the note and deed of trust, or at least the note, you are a holder. And the problem I have with that is that a holder is defined in the statute as an entity or person who is in possession of a negotiable instrument that is payable either to bearer or to an identified person that is the person in possession. And the note here is not payable either to bearer or to One West. So it seems to me that One West cannot be a holder under the statutory definition of holder.
Under the statutory definition of holder, you would have to look at the original note. And the original note actually provides a blank endorsement. It is endorsed in blank, and One West is the holder. So the documentation of negotiation actually has been made.
Well, the blank, the definition doesn't mention endorsement in blank. It says payable either to bearer. It says, quote, payable either to bearer, which this note is not, at least judging by the copy that is in the record, or payable to an identified person that is the person in possession. That would be your client, One West, except that it is not made payable to One West. In other words, it doesn't say a thing about endorsement.
The statute provides negotiation in the case called Pierce and under Colorado Revised Statute 4-3-301, that when it defines negotiation, it says negotiation finds that either it is endorsed to a specific person, and that would be, it would create order paper, or it is endorsed in blank. And in this particular case, it is endorsed in blank, making it bearer paper.
That's different from being a holder.
Actually, the definition of holder provided in Pierce provides that you have possession of the original note and deed of trust. And under the Colorado case law, it also says the same thing, that the holder is not required to be the holder. It is the party in possession of a document of title or an instrument or a certified investment security drawn, issued, or endorsed to him or his order or to bearer in blank pursuant to Colorado Revised Statute 4-3-301.
This is not endorsed to bearer in blank. It's not endorsed to the bearer.
It's endorsed in blank.
But it's not endorsed to the bearer in blank.
That would be...
That's what the statute says. Do you not defend the district court's ruling on the basis that it ruled?
I defend the district court's ruling.
But there's nothing in your brief that does. It just ignores it. The whole servicing agent theory that the court used.
I would agree.
I mean, how are we to take that? It almost sounds like a concession that you don't think the court got it right.
I think that the court got the ultimate decision correct. I think perhaps the reasoning may be different. I may disagree with the reasoning. Ultimately, at the end of the day, there was a Rule 120 proceeding. During that Rule 120 proceeding, the court found that One West had standing. During that Rule 120 proceeding, Mr. Weston admitted on the record that he had not been making mortgage payments and that he had not made them since at least December of 2008. I think that this was an improper appeal by virtue of a Rule 105 to the district court saying, I want an order from you overturning the order authorizing sale. I mean, that's specifically what he asked for in that Rule 105.
But a Rule 120 determination is not res judicata. A party may still bring a claim for wrongful foreclosure. I think that's pretty clear in the rule itself that it's not res judicata.
Certainly, Your Honor. But I think that if... Here's the difference. In a Rule 120, when you assert an affirmative defense, particularly when it's the grounds of standing, that's saying, plaintiff or petitioner, I would like you to show by prima facie evidence that you have standing, that you are the real party in interest. It is a naked affirmative defense. It does not require that they bring any documentation with them in order to assert that defense. In a Rule 105 proceeding, however, the plaintiff bears that initial burden of showing that One West does, in fact, not hold the note. Plaintiff bore that burden in this case, and plaintiff didn't meet it at all. So plaintiff took it as another way to affirmatively say, make a naked conclusory allegation without a single shred of evidence, to say that One West was in fact not the holder of the note. There is no evidentiary basis for that. And in fact, Mr. Brunette, in his oral argument, specifically provided, I don't know who holds the note.
But in order to prevail, doesn't One West have to present at least prima facie evidence that it is the holder?
In the Rule 120, which was done. But in the separate legal action, the burden is not on One West to show that it had standing. That's the whole point. Mr. Brunette is basically making the argument, let's treat the Rule 105 as an appeal.
It was your motion.
It was my motion to dismiss the Rule 105.
Yes.
But the Rule 105 and the Rule 120 are separate.
I understand. So when you file the motion in the 105 proceeding, you have to prevail, and in order to prevail, aren't you required to show prima facie evidence that you are in fact the holder? I mean, as I'm understanding, Wesson's argument is that they have alleged that you're not the holder, and you have not presented sufficient evidence upon which to establish that you are the holder, that your evidence is insufficient on its face.
In the Rule 120, we provided sufficient evidence, and the court ruled that we had standing in order to proceed with the foreclosure. In the Rule 105, the burden was on the plaintiff to show that, in fact, the allegation that we were not the holder of the evidence of debt, that One West was not the holder of the evidence of debt, was on plaintiff to come forward. The purpose of a motion to dismiss in this jurisdiction is to see whether there's sufficient facts that would require a trial. And if the plaintiff fails to state a claim upon which relief may be granted under 12b-5, we can dismiss it if there are no facts that support a claim. And that's just it. He's coming to the court saying, I don't know, I don't have evidence, I'd like discovery to find out who the holder is, because I don't believe that it's One West. I have no reasonable basis. I have no good faith basis. There's not another entity coming in saying we're foreclosing too on the same deed of trust and note or trying to collect. We're just looking. I mean, he admits that One West is the servicer. He admits that. He admits that, you know, it's part of a pooling and servicing trust. I mean, he knows where those payments go. They go to the servicer. It was One West. And in this particular case, he's saying, even though I know who the servicer is, even though I know who the trustee is, I am still going to argue that they don't have standing.
Counsel, I want to go back to the evidence of the Rule 120, because you keep making a lot of that. As I understand, it was two documents. So first, you failed to prevail in that, then presented two more documents, the master purchase agreement and the corporation assignment. Now, I've read both those documents. The master purchase agreement doesn't talk about servicing loans. And it refers to an attachment of loans that are covered, but it's not included in the record. So there's nothing in the master purchase agreement that is in the record that shows that this loan's covered by it, and secondly, that it gives your client servicing rights as to that loan. The corporation assignment is blank. It doesn't say who it's assigned to. And that's what you're relying on as evidence that you're the holder?
In our motion to reconsider, Mr. Weston had the opportunity to respond to that motion to reconsider, and the court waited for it. Mr. Weston did not respond to it, and the court entered our order authorizing sale. Again, we've invited Mr. Brunette to come to our office and look at the original note and deed of trust. It's been in our possession. And I appreciate that. But these were very volatile times, and when the FDIC seized IndyMac, they transferred into they created a new holding corporation, IndyMac Federal Bank FSB, and all the assets, including the servicing rights, were sold from the FDIC to One West, and that's what that servicing agreement says, is that all those assets, including the servicing rights under that loan, were transferred. Mr. Brunette admits that this loan is actually part of that transfer. Mr. Brunette admits that this is the servicer. Mr. Brunette admits that there is Deutsche Bank is the trustee. The question he has is which of these two parties holds the note? And the answer is One West holds the note. And he has no evidence to the contrary. And he brought a separate legal action asserting that One West was not the holder of the note, even though he had absolutely no evidence no reasonable basis, no good faith basis, to assert that One West was not the holder of the evidence of debt. Again, he took that out of the Rule 120, that ability to argue without any evidence and say, oh, you don't have standing and I don't have to do anything else. And he tried to apply that in Rule 105, and the burden was not on us to show that we had standing until he made a prima facie showing as the plaintiff as required, because the burden of proof was on the plaintiff to show that One West didn't have standing. Again, he could have, if this was a situation where there were two banks that were coming forward and saying, guess what, we're both looking at the note and the deed of trust. That would have been different, or trying to enforce the terms of the note and the deed of trust. That's not what you have here. What you have here is one, I mean, he admits, again, One West is the servicer and Deutsch was the holder. I'm sorry, Deutsch was not the holder. Deutsch was the trustee. One West has always been the holder.
All right, well, counsel, you may have overstated, though, what he's conceded, because as I understand his argument today, while he concedes that One West is a servicer for Deutsche Bank of something, he has not conceded that this particular note is part of that trust, it sounded like to me, and that there's no evidence in the record that shows that this particular note is part of that trust. What is in the record that shows that?
Well, I believe he's actually provided that. He provided the master pooling and servicing agreement, and he has admitted
without attachments. We don't have the attachments that are referred to in those documents, which say which loans are covered. They're not in the record.
I believe he stated that in his brief. What he explicitly stated that he understood that this was covered, and that's why it was not addressed by us, and that's why we didn't provide any other additional documentation, because it was an admission.
Ms. Hendrick, I mean, it's you know, it's apparent that there's a lot of frustration in this. Here's my concern. You've asked for a judgment on the pleadings, and he's made allegations that you are not the holder of the note. And he doesn't have to plead who is the holder of the note. All he has to do is plead, you are not, and therefore you don't have standing. Now, to the extent you want a judgment on the pleadings, then the question is, have they alleged facts which, if true, would entitle them to judgment? Now, if the court goes beyond the pleadings and looks at the documents and essentially rules on the basis of summary judgment, don't you have to present sufficient facts to demonstrate that there is no genuine issue of material fact? And in order to prevail on that, don't you have to present sufficient evidence that, if true and if undisputed, would state that you are entitled to the property?
On the pleadings at that point, we were entitled to possession of the property because property ownership of the property had been, by virtue of the foreclosure sale, vested in One West. So I think on the pleadings, you know, when you want to talk about ownership of the property itself, it had vested in One West. If we're talking about ownership of the note, again, it's a blanket statement that he has never, ever had a shred of evidence. His statement has always been, I don't know, and I want discovery in the hopes I might find out. But we don't allow fishing expeditions. And I want to simply say, at the end of the day, even if you remand this back down, we will present the original note and deed of trust to the trial court, and the trial court, based upon the case law, will find that we've presented prima facie evidence of standing. And so I think that this appeal is, I think it's futile, but I think at the end of the day, the judge got it right, albeit her reasoning. The ultimate decision was correct. Thank you.
Bailiff, would you give Mr. Brunette a total of 2 minutes? Proceed.
Counsel for One West stands here today and says, Your Honor, we have the note. We spent two and a half years litigating to find this note, and they produced it for the first time in the Court of Appeals. We are entitled to attorney's fees and costs under Rule 105, and we need to get back to the district court and do that. I still don't know that they have the note. They say that we had to prove a negative. We allege that they are not the holder of this note, and that they do not have a valid assignment of this deed of trust. The court below has already correctly found that. Those allegations are premised on findings that are already in there. Say, where's the note? We need discovery. We need litigation to get to the heart of this matter. This is not raising some imaginary argument that is just trying to, you know, make things difficult. We'll get to the basics of real property law. Article 1, Constitution of the State of Colorado, is a legal description of the real property boundaries of the State of Colorado. That's all it is. Article 14, Section 1, adopts the counties of the territory of Colorado as the counties of the State of Colorado. Article 14, Section, a little further down, creates an official constitutional office to keep track of real property ownership records in the state of Colorado in the clerk and recorder's office.
It's Council, I want to cut to the chase here. If we were to remand this case and council simply presents the original of the note and deed of trust in the district court.
I'm sorry, yeah, council.
If we remand the case and council produces the original of the note and deed of trust, what's your response to that? Are we remanding to just waste everybody's time?
First thing I would do is want to authenticate those documents, you know, especially in light of what's happened in the last few years. And we would still need to complete litigation and adjudication of where those documents came from if they've been hiding out somewhere for 2.5 years.
Keeping in mind that that while you're doing that and running up fees, the note entitles them to attorney's fees.
You don't want to run up fees, Your Honor. We want this case to be resolved. Dr. Weston just wanted to know from day one, where's my note? Who do I make my new deal with and get this done? Instead, we faced an intense foreclosure, eviction, and motion to dismiss.
Well, he defaulted. What did he expect?
Your Honor, the default is in the Rule 120. That's why I brought up, not disrespectfully, that this isn't a Rule 120. This is 105. This isn't an appeal from Rule 120. This is a complete adjudication of all claims of right and interest in this property. What's happened is the veil of certification has become so powerful, it's become the tail wagging the dog. We need to get back to basics. Constitutional rights of ownership in this country and this state, and the duties of someone who wants to foreclose under Rule 120 in a summary way, their records don't match what's there. It's an evidentiary proceeding under Rule 105. That's all Dr. Weston wanted from day one, and he still has not been given that.
Thank you, Mr. Brunette. Again, I'll reiterate that we would like a filing with the court when the administrator has been appointed and a statement by the administrator as to his or her preferences regarding this appeal and representation by these counsel. The case now has been submitted. We will not issue an opinion until after we receive such a pleading. And Division 5 is now in recess.